Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe. Up in the captain's chair in the Gene Bosch Memorial Studio on the magical Isle of Vashon, broadcasting live on Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the FM band, and broadcasting, streaming all over the world, from Singapore on one side of the world to the Kingdom of Sweden on the other, of which Stockholm is the capital. Streaming live on voiceofvashon.org. And I am in particularly happy mood today. Well, actually, I'm almost always in a happy mood, but today, because a couple of things have happened that have contributed to my joie de vivre. So my greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who are about to embark or now are embarking on great adventures. And I bring this up because a little while ago I was talking to my friend Anastasia, she of the Kula Kloss. Those of you who go out into the, you ladies who go out into the bushes, you need a collection of Kula Kloss. You can call that up on any search engine and learn about it. Anastasia told me that later on this year, she and her husband Aaron are going to take a motorcycle trip through the Himalaya Mountains. That journey does not include a climb of Mount Everest on motorcycles, but it will go up pretty high. And the idea is that you ride these traditional British motorcycles and ride on these old roads, and you go up pretty high. I've never heard of anything like this until we talked about it this morning. And so I am looking forward to both hearing more about this when next we meet, and also to, of course, have their trip report when they return. So for all of Captain Joe's people who are now on or about to embark on some great adventure, know how much I encourage you to do it. Know that you are, as you make your journeys and voyages and flights, that you are always in the palm of my hand. And I will be, of course, I have now scheduled four trips between now and the end of the summer. And to make those trips, I, of course, will have to make some modifications to my binnacle list entry, which is the next thing on the plan of the day for today, the binnacle list. So our friend David, who has had such a difficult time in so many parts of the body, is moving along in a smart and seaman-like fashion. He begins some cardiac rehabilitation very soon. In the meantime, one of Captain Joe's people on the Coast Guard Channel, Janice, is having some real challenges, which we all are counting on being resolved through some careful investigation. And I am putting President Biden on the binnacle list to add to a world leader, His Majesty King Charles III. I have a comment or two to make about the diagnosis that we heard about President Biden over the last week, because, of course, that is the same condition with which I am having my contest with, among other things, Mr. Poley. I did not know until I saw or heard the report on the news that there were numbers assigned to prostate cancer diagnoses besides the stages 1, 2, 3, and 4. And not knowing that, I don't know what to tell you as to what my number is. I am told, and what I heard was that President Biden's number is 9, which is pretty high. What I also will tell you is that one of the things that I heard in this report was that it's possible that over the years, because he is over the age of 70, that they were no longer doing the PSA test, which is the test, prostate-specific something. Anyway, it's the test that tells you the level of cancer activity that's going on in your prostate. I have had those a number of times, all the way up to the last one. And that's how we have been able to measure that the chemicals that I am taking are doing their work so far as the cancer is concerned. It is because I am still engaged with Mr. Pooley that those same chemicals are not doing their work so far as the shrinking of the organ is concerned. All of this is to tell you that there are, for each of us and each of you, because I know that there are many out there who are Captain Joe's people who have been either in the past or are now dealing with a prostate cancer diagnosis. And I am also aware that some of you out there have conquered it successfully. A Bravo Zulu for that. So, I don't know yet the significance of these numbers that are attached to cancer. I do know this, that I am being treated by a highly skilled professional. I trust him completely. And his work is also being staffed through my primary care physician, Dr. Chris. So, I am significantly advanced in years over President Biden. I am still here. I am still traveling. I remain of really good cheer. I am up in the captain's chair, and I remain fully in command. I have a feeling that part of that being fully in command is because that is the way I am. I am the one that is in charge of my health care. And my XO in this is my friend, colleague, physician, Dr. Chris. It is I who make the decisions. And it is I who, if I make a bad decision, am fully responsible and accountable. But I get really great advice, and I trust all of these people who are working with me, which leads me to the next trusting that comes up tomorrow, because tomorrow, the ever-lovely Vivian, my little Vietnamese RN, is going to pull out almost 2 feet of Mr. Pooley, and we're going to see how well I do. I keep telling you all of these things because I know that by my confessing my concerns and my successes and my failures, that they also help some of you out there who are dealing with the same questions and the same problems. And so it's going to continue until you get that signal from probably Captain O'Brien that your captain is not up in the chair today because he has crossed his own bar. And that one is, I think, quite a ways off, because we have work to do together. And we have places to go and people to see. Captain Joe's people to keep on helping out, and they helping him. And that is what I have to say about all of that today. Next week, I will be here up in the chair, and I will report to you what success, if any, I have with Mr. Poley. But that's not going to keep me from my travels, not going to keep me from all of my activities, all of my do-goods, because there is work yet to be done. Last weekend was Armed Forces Day, and I missed it. But I did not miss the fullness of Armed Forces Month, which is the month of May. It's also the month of Mary R.'s birthday. Several other of Captain Joe's people have birthdays in the month of May. And it is Armed Forces Day, Armed Forces Month. My membership in the Armed Forces of the United States is, of course, has been part of my life since I was 17. And that's true of many of you as well. So for all of us who have served, know that the flag out at Point Robinson flies 24 hours a day. When the main light comes on, the floodlight comes on the flag. And I am always honored when I have people who come in to take my tour, to go out onto the beach, and they make known to me that they have served. It is always my honor to tell them that the flag is flying out there in honor of all of us who have served. The young people, and some not so young, who are serving today, and the young people who will come behind us. The Mexican tall ship that collided with the Brooklyn Bridge, Cuauhtemoc, an Inca name, I think. One of the elements about this, I saw today, this morning, before I came to be with us together for our weekly meeting, for which I am always grateful that you continue to give me a part of your day on Tuesdays. I watched a press release by the investigator, the principal investigator for the National Transportation Safety Board. And one of the things that they mentioned along, and his boss was also there, the two of them were double teaming on the press session, was that they had not yet actually gone aboard the Mexican ship. And so I point out here that a warship or a government ship, but certainly a warship, of which Cuauhtemoc is one, even though she carries no weapons, she belongs to one of the naval academies of Mexico, that ship is a piece of sovereign territory of that particular country. It requires the permission of the country, and in this particular case, the ambassador to the United States from Mexico would become involved. The consul general from Mexico to New York would become involved, and certainly the captain would become involved in granting permission. And if they decide, for whatever reason, that they choose not to grant permission, then that ship is a part of the territory of Mexico, and they won't go aboard. It is my hope and my wish and would certainly be my command if I were a part of the Mexican Navy. I've had a couple of very interesting contacts with senior Mexican officers, by the way, when I was captain in Northwind. Maybe I'll get to one of those stories if I have time today. But would be my command if I were in the Mexican government to quickly grant that permission so that these trained investigators, which include also the Coast Guard Maritime Marine Safety investigators, can go aboard and figure out what happened. What looks to me was that somehow or other she was put into a backing bell and was not able to take it off before she hit the bridge. As is my custom, of course, I do not comment on any of these things until I have some definitive information to pass on. I choose not to speculate. I heard a piece from Sal, who is What's Going On with Shipping Guy. It was painful to listen to his so-called analysis. He has never sailed in square rig ships. He knows nothing about them, and it was clear from his remarks that he knew nothing about them. I have trained for 4 years in our Eagle. One of the reasons why there were no more young people killed was that all of them were wearing harnesses. When I was a cadet, we had no harnesses. We had no safety harnesses. We climbed the rigging. We worked out on the yards. And we slid down the backstays. All of that without any kind of safety harness except one hand for yourself and one hand for the ship. A few years after I graduated, a cadet fell and was killed. And that motivated the Coast Guard to require, as they do now, and as do all training square rig ships, require that those who climb, climb with safety harnesses, and it saved the lives of a number of young cadets. Of that I'm certain. As is always the case, my heart goes out to the captain and crew who have lost shipmates and damage to a lovely ship. She looks to me like she could be a sister to our Eagle, and I am told that she was built in Spain, which means that she would not be an identical sister because the sisters to our Eagle were built before World War II in Germany in Blohm+Voss. And then the Germans in the late 1950s, I think, built several more to the same drawings and with some updated watertight integrity. But she looks very much the same. She's rigged the same as a bark, which means she's square rigged on the fore and the main, and she is fore and aft rigged on the mizzen. She's a lovely ship. And I have to believe that there was some major catastrophe in her machinery, either in her engines or if she had CP, controllable pitch propeller, something in there. Her pilot is already speaking up a little bit. I'm not going to comment on that until I have more information to share. The book today is, I have completed now The Ship Beneath the Ice. The Ship Beneath the Ice is written by Menson Bound. I've commented on this book before. It is the story of finding the wreck of Endurance down at the bottom of the Weddell Sea. And at the time that I had first talked about this book, I remarked that I felt that Mr. Bound, who was in charge of the expedition to find her, was trying to revise the Shackleton story a little bit. I feel now that I may have misspoken a little bit. In any case, I have now completed the book, and I've completed the part where, especially the part where Endurance herself is found and where they were able to send down a remotely operated underwater vehicle, and they were able to, among other things, take photographs of her stern, and you can see the word Endurance across her stern. Because she's protected by the Antarctic Treaty, she will, I hope, never be dived on. She will never be plundered like Titanic. And, of course, there are no bodies in her to be found and removed and recovered because, thanks to Sir Ernest, they were all saved. So I'm going to read a quote from the very last chapter in the book, and it is where Menson Bound, the author of the book, is talking with a old friend of his by the name of Chad Bonin. And they were talking about how the story ended. And Chad starts off by, and I'm now quoting from the book, which I do recommend that you read. So Chad says, "That wreck fairy sure left something under your pillow." "Yeah, I agree." And the I, of course, is Mr. Bound. "A fairy tale ending, you might say. Whatever we do from now on, we are never going to be able to top this one." There is a long pause while we both consider this. I ponder the next chapters ahead of me, wondering whether anything could even compare. "You know what gets me," says Chad, "I mean about the whole Shackleton thing? It's that those guys got away with it. They shouldn't have. 28 went in and 28 came out." Parenthetical insertion here from your captain. When I read that line, I really puckered up. And so here is the answer. I, Mr. Bounds, think about this for a bit. No, I gently correct him, not 28. There were 27 of them and Shackleton. That redeems Mr. Bounds in my mind, because he's exactly right. No matter how you want to read South, which was partly ghostwritten, of course, or any of the other accounts of the Endurance story, and no matter how much you want to question Shackleton's abilities or capabilities or motives, the fact remains that he did indeed accomplish an incredibly remarkable story of leadership. And not only leadership, but of caring in his own way for the people that he was privileged to command. In other words, to use your captain's, one of his favorite words, he was a true shipmate, not only captain, but true shipmate to all that he was privileged to command. I've tried to do that myself. I have, as did Shackleton, fail in some ways. But Shackleton, in the ways that really counted, he took all of his men to sea. They all came through the sinking of Endurance. He took them all to Elephant Island And he returned for them, and they were all waiting for him. No story gets any better than that. And I recommend the book, The Ship Beneath the Ice. But I also recommend that when you read it, that you read it along with South, which is Shackleton's own account of how it all happened. My magazine today is Power Ships. Used to be called Steamboat Bill. It is the journal of the Steamship Historical Society of America. And I bring it up today because it comes to me along with some very interesting material that has to do with the society itself. Back in November, I went to the annual general meeting in Queen Mary down in Long Beach, California. And I met all of the people who are involved with the society itself, of which I have been a regular and voting member for, I think, maybe 35 or 40 years, for a long time. But it was my first time in meeting the people that actually run the society, and I had just a wonderful time. They are lovely and very professional people. And one of the things that was discussed at the board meeting, of which I was privileged to attend, was that the society was hoping to acquire its own lighthouse. Meet to your captain is this whenever. I said, if you do acquire that lighthouse, I will come to Rhode Island. It was one of the lighthouses in Narragansett Bay. Not Narragansett Bay, in Rhode Island. I will come to there, and I will do a professional inspection of that lighthouse, and I will give you a work list of those things that you need to do to bring it up to the proper standards. And I stood by. I renewed my membership, and then I got a signal from the society, and it said that we are not able to acquire the lighthouse. So I was sad about that. But it gave me the opportunity, and it gives me the opportunity now to put in just a little bit of an endorsement for the Steamship Society, Historical Society of America. Amy Ray Jack, who is one of Captain Joe's people, is the membership coordinator, and the website is sshsa.org. And if any of you are interested in maritime history, this is a wonderful place to go. And this most recent copy of Power Ships, which used to be called Steamboat Bill, and I wish it still was. If I'd been given a chance to vote on that, which I was not, then I would have voted no, because I like the words Steamboat Bill. And an article that's in it is two Navy ships depart the lakes. And these are two of the littoral combat ships, USS Nantucket and the USS Beloit. And they were completed at Marinette, the former used to be called Marinette Marine Shipyard in Marinette, Wisconsin. They were completed there. It's now called Fincantieri. It's owned by an Italian conglomerate. And they were, they then deployed out of the lakes. And I found this article interesting because it says that the two vessels were assisted through the Welland Canal and through the locks in the St. Lawrence Seaway. And it listed the names of the tugs that were used to do that. And so from here, from the captain's chair, I am going to proclaim that not ever did any tug ever touch any of my ships, except when they were cold iron. And certainly they never touched my Northwind when I took her through the Welland Canal and through the locks in the St. Lawrence Freeway, Seaway. Never, never, never. and I'm led to wonder, where are the ship handling skills? I know the answer to that. We need to do some work on that, Commandant, Acting Commandant of the Coast Guard. And I am looking now at my large watch, and it is telling me that once again we have far too quickly come to the end of our time together. This is your Captain Joe. Up in the captain's chair, we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And as always, I am on station, watching properly. And all of you, whether you are in trouble, in danger, or happy and ready to go, are in the palm of my hand.